remembering Alec's words in the Accords Hall. "And I will give him the morning star." Sebastian whirled on her, his eyes bright. "Yes," he said. "Yes, very good. You are understanding now. I thought I wanted our world, to bring it down in blood. But I want more than that. I want the legacy of the Morgenstern name."
"You want to be the devil?" Clary said, half baffled and half terrified. "You want to rule hell?" She spread her hands out. "Go ahead, then," she said. "None of us will stop you. Let us go home. Promise you'll leave our world alone and you can have hell."
"Alas," said Sebastian, "for I have discovered one other thing that perhaps sets me apart from Lucifer. I do not want to rule alone." He extended his arm, an elegant gesture, and indicated the two great thrones on the dais. "One of those is for me, and the other is for you."
The streets of Alicante turned and twisted back in on themselves like the currents of a sea. If Emma hadn't been following Helen, who was carrying a witchlight in one hand and her crossbow in the other, she would have been hopelessly lost. The last of the sun was vanishing from the sky and the streets were dark. Julian was carrying Tavi, the baby's arms locked around his neck. Emma held Drew by the hand and the twins clung together in silence. Drew wasn't fast and kept stumbling. She fell several times and Emma had to drag her to her feet. Jules called out to Emma to be careful, and she was trying to be careful. She couldn't imagine how Julian did it, holding Tavi so carefully, murmuring so reassuringly that the little boy didn't even cry. Drew was sobbing silently. Emma brushed the tears off the younger girl's cheeks as she helped her up for the fourth time, murmuring nonsense comforting words the way her mother once had to her when she had been a child and had fallen. She had never missed her parents more agonizingly than she did now. It felt like a knife under her ribs. "Drew," she began, and the sky lit up red. The demon towers had flamed to the color of pure scarlet, all the gold of warning gone. "The city walls are broken," Helen said, staring up at the guard. Emma knew she was thinking about Aline. The red glow of the towers turned her pale hair the color of blood. "Come on, quickly." Emma wasn't sure if they could go any more quickly. She got a tighter hold of Drusilla's wrist and yanked the little girl nearly off her feet, muttering apologies as she went. The twins, hand in hand, were faster, even as they raced up a jagged set of stairs towards Angel Square, led by Helen. They were almost at the top step when Julian gasped out, "Helen, behind us!" And Emma spun around to see a fairy knight in white armor approaching the foot of the stairs. He carried a bow made from a curved branch, and his hair was long and bark-colored. For a moment, his eyes met Helen's. The expression on his face changed, and Emma couldn't help wondering if he recognized the fair folk in her blood. And then Helen raised her right arm and shot her crossbow directly at him. He whirled away. The bolt hit the wall behind him. The fairy smirked and leaped up the first step, then the second, and screamed. Emma watched in shock as his legs buckled under him. He fell and howled as his skin came into contact with the edge of the step. For the first time, Emma noticed that corkscrews, nails, and other hunks of cold forged iron had been hammered into the step edges. The fairy warrior reeled back and Helen shot again. The bolt went through his armor and into his chest. He crumpled. "They fairy-proofed," Emma said, remembering looking out the window at the Penhallows with Ty and Helen. "All the metal, the iron." She pointed at a nearby building where a long row of scissors hung from cords connected to the edge of the roof. "That's what the guards were doing." Suddenly, Drew shrieked. Another figure raced up the street, a second fairy knight, this one a woman with an armor of pale green, carrying a shield of overlapping carved leaves. Emma whipped a knife from her belt and threw it. Instinctively, the fairy raised her shield to block the knife, which sailed past her head, and severed the cord holding a pair of scissors to the roof above. The scissors fell, blade first, and plunged between the fairy woman's shoulders. She fell to the ground with a shriek, her body spasming. "Good job, Emma," said Helen in a hard voice. "Come on, all of you." She broke off with a cry as three Andarkened surged from a side street. They wore the red gear that had appeared so often in Emma's nightmares, dyed even redder by the light from the demon towers. The children were silent as ghosts. Helen raised her crossbow and shot a bolt. It struck one of the Indarkand in the shoulder and he spun away, staggering but not falling. She fumbled to reload the bow. Julian struggled to hold Tavi while reaching for the blade at his side. Emma put her hand on Cortana. A spinning circle of light hurtled through the air and buried itself in the throat of the first Indarkand, blood spattering the wall behind him. He clawed at his throat once and fell. Two more circles flew, one after the other, and sliced into the chests of the other Dark Nephilim. They crumpled silently, more blood spreading in a pool along the cobblestones. Emma whirled and looked up. Someone stood at the top of the stairs, a young shadowhunter with dark hair, a gleaming chakram still in his right hand. Several others were hooked to his weapons belt. In the red light of the demon towers, he seemed to glow, a tall, thin figure in dark gear against the darker black of night, the Accords Hall rising like a pale moon behind him. "Brother Zachariah," said Helen in amazement.
"What's going on?" Magnus asked hoarsely. He was no longer able to sit up, and was lying half-propped on his elbows, on the floor of the cell. Luke was standing with his face pressed to the arrow-slit window. His shoulders were tense, and he'd barely moved since the first screams and shouting had begun. "Light," Luke said, finally. "There's some kind of light pouring out of the keep. It's burning the mist away. I can see the plateau down below, and some of the Indarkand running around. I just don't know what's caused it." Magnus laughed under his breath and tasted metal in his mouth. "Come on. Who do you think?" Luke looked at him. "The Clave?" "The Clave," Magnus said. "I hate to break it to you, but they don't care enough about us to come here." He tipped his head back. He felt worse than he could remember ever feeling. Well, maybe not ever. There had been the incident with the rats in the quicksand around the turn of the century. "Your daughter, though," he said. "She does." Luke looked horrified. "Clary? No, she couldn't be here." "Isn't she always where she isn't supposed to be?" Magnus said in a reasonable voice. At least he thought he sounded reasonable. It was hard to tell when he felt so dizzy. "And the rest of them, her constant companions. The door burst open. Magnus tried to sit up, couldn't, and fell back onto his elbows. He felt a dull sense of annoyance. If Sebastian had come to kill them, he'd rather die on his feet than his elbows. He heard voices, Luke exclaiming, and then others, and then a face swam into view, hovering over his, eyes like stars in a pale sky. Magnus exhaled. For a moment he no longer felt ill, or afraid of dying, or even angry or bitter. Relief washed over him, as profound as sorrow, and he reached up to brush the cheek of the boy leaning over him with the back of his bruised knuckles. Alec's eyes were huge and blue and full of anguish.
"Oh, my Alec," he said. "You've been so sad. I didn't know."
As they forged their way farther into the center of the city, the crowd thickened. More Nephilim, more Indarkand, more fairy warriors. Though the fairies moved sluggishly, painfully, many of them weakened by contact with the iron, steel, rowan wood, and salt that had been liberally deployed around the city as protection against them. The might of fairy soldiers was legendary, but Emma saw many of them, who might otherwise have been victorious, fall beneath the flashing swords of the Nephilim, their blood running across the white flagstones of Angel Square. The Indarkand, however, were not weakened. They seemed unconcerned with the troubles of their fairy companions, hacking and slashing their way through the Nephilim jamming Angel Square. Julian had Tavi zipped into his jacket. The little boy was screaming now, his cries lost among the shrieks of battle. "We have to stop," Julian shouted. "We're going to be separated. Helen!" Helen was pale and ill-looking. The closer they got to the Hall of Accords now looming above them, the thicker the clusters of fairy protection spells were. Even Helen with her partial heritage was beginning to feel it. It was Brother Zachariah, just Zachariah now, Emma reminded herself, just a shadow hunter like they were, in the end, who moved to fashion them all into a line. Blackthorns and Carstairs, everyone hand in hand. Emma hung on to Julian's belt since his other hand was supporting Tavi. Even Ty was forced to hold hands with Drusilla, though he scowled at her when he did, bringing fresh tears to her eyes. They made their way toward the hall, clinging together, Zachariah in front of them. He was out of throwing blades and had taken out a long-bladed spear. He swept the crowd with it as they went, efficiently and icily hacking a pathway through the Undarkened. Emma burned to seize Cortana out of its scabbard, to run forward and stab and slash at the enemies who had murdered her parents, who had tortured and turned Julian's father, who had taken Mark away from them. But that would have meant letting go of Julian and Livy, and that she would not do. She owed the Blackthorns too much, Jules especially, Jules who had kept her alive, who had brought her Cortana when she had thought she would die of grief. Finally, they stumbled up the front steps of the hall behind Helen and Zachariah, and reached the massive double doors of the entryway. There was a guard on either side, one holding an enormous wooden bar. Emma recognized one of them as the woman with the coy tattoo who sometimes spoke out in meetings. Diana Rayburn.
"We're about to shut the doors," said the one holding the bar. "You two, you're going to have to leave them here. Only children are allowed inside."
"Helen?" said Drew in a trembling little voice. The line broke into pieces then, with the Blackthorn children swarming Helen, Julian standing a little aside, his face blank and ashen, his free hand stroking Tavi's curls. "It's all right," Helen was saying in a choked voice. "This is the safest place in Alicante. Look, there's salt and grave dirt all up and down the steps to keep the fairies out." "And cold iron under the flagstones," said Diana. The instructions of the spiral labyrinth were followed to the letter. At the mention of the spiral labyrinth, Zachariah took a sharp breath and knelt down, bringing his eyes on a level with Emma's. "Emma Cordelia Carstairs," he said. He looked both very young and very old at the same time. There was blood at his throat where his faded rune stood out, but it wasn't his. He seemed to be searching her face, though for what she couldn't tell. "Stay with your parabatai," he said finally, so quietly that no one else could hear them. "Sometimes it's braver not to fight. Protect them and save your vengeance for another day." Emma felt her eyes widen. "But I don't have a parabatai, and how did you..." One of the guards cried out and fell, a red fletched arrow in his chest. "Get inside," shouted Diana, seizing hold of the children and half throwing them into the hall. Emma felt herself caught and tossed inside. She spun to get one last look at Zachariah and Helen, but it was too late. The double doors had slammed shut after her, the massive wooden latch falling into place with a sound of echoing finality.
"No," Clary said, looking from the terrifying throne to Sebastian and back again. "Blank your mind," she told herself. "Focus on Sebastian, on what's happening here, on what you can do to stop him. Don't think about Jace." "You must know I won't stay here. Maybe you'd rather rule hell than serve in heaven, but I don't want either. I just want to go home and live my life." "That isn't possible. I've already sealed the pathway that brought you here. No one can return through it. All that's left is this here." He gestured to the window. "And in a short time, that will be sealed too. There will be no returning home, not for you. You belong here, with me." "Why?" she whispered. "Why me?" "Because I love you," Sebastian said. He looked uncomfortable, tense and strained, as if he were reaching for something he couldn't quite touch. "I don't want you hurt."
"You don't... You have hurt me. You tried to..."
"It doesn't matter if I hurt you," he said. "Because you belong to me. I can do what I want with you. But I don't want other people touching you, or owning you, or hurting you. I want you to be around, to admire me, and to see what I've done, what I've accomplished. That's love, isn't it?" "No," Clary said, in a soft, sad voice. "No, it isn't." She took a step toward him, and her boot knocked against the invisible force field of a circle of runes. She could go no farther. "If you love someone, then you want them to love you back." Sebastian's eyes narrowed. "Don't patronize me. I know what you think love is, Clarissa. I happen to think you're wrong. You will ascend the throne, and you will reign beside me. You have a dark heart in you,
and it is a darkness we share. When I am all there is in your world, when I am all that is left, you will love me back.
I don't understand. I can't imagine you would.
Sebastian smirked. You aren't exactly in possession of all the information.
Let me guess. You know nothing of what's happened in Alicante since you departed.
A cold feeling began to spread in Clary's stomach.
We're in another dimension, she said. There's no way to know.
Not exactly, said Sebastian, and his voice was rich with delight, as if she had fallen into precisely the trap he had wanted. Look into the window above the Eastern Throne. Look, and see Alicante now.
Clary looked. When she had come into the room, she had seen only what seemed like the starred night sky through the eastern window. But now, as she concentrated, the surface of the glass shimmered and rippled. She thought of the story of Snow White suddenly, the magic mirror, its surface shimmering and changing to reveal the outside world. She was looking at the inside of the Accords Hall. It was full of children. Shadowhunter children sat and stood and clung together. There were the Blackthorns, the children huddled tightly in a group. Julian, sitting with the baby on his lap. His free arm stretched out, as if he could encompass the rest of his siblings, could pull them all in and protect them. Emma sat close by him, her expression stony, her golden sword gleaming behind her shoulder. The scene resolved into Angel Square. All around the Hall of Accords was a boiling mass of Nephilim, and ranged against them were the Undarkened in their scarlet gear, bristling with weapons. And not just the Undarkened, but figures that Clary recognized with a sinking heart as fairy warriors. A tall fairy with hair of mixed blue and green strands was battling Aline Penhallow, who stood in front of her mother, her sword drawn as if ready to fight to the death. Across the square was Helen, trying to push her way through the crowd toward Aline. But the crush was too great. The fighting penned her back. But so did the bodies. Bodies of Nephilim warriors, fallen and dying. So many more in black gear than red. They were losing the battle. Losing it. Clary whirled on Sebastian as the scene began to fade.
What's happening?
It's over, he said. I requested that the Clave turn you over to me. They didn't. Admittedly, because you'd run off. But nevertheless, they were of no further use to me. My forces have invaded the city. The Nephilim children are hiding in the Accords Hall. But when all the others are dead, the hall will be taken. Alicante will be mine. All of Idris will be mine. The Shadowhunters have lost the war. Not that there was much of one. I really thought that they'd put up more of a fight.
That's hardly all the Shadowhunters that exist, Clary said. That was just who was in Alicante. There are still Nephilim scattered all over the world.
All the Shadowhunters you see there will drink from the infernal cup soon enough. Then they will be my servants, and I will send them out to find their brethren in the world. And those who remain will be turned or killed. I will slay the Iron Sisters and the Silent Brothers in their citadels of stone and silence. Inside of a month, the race of Jonathan Shadowhunter will be wiped from the world. And then, he smiled a terrible smile, and gestured toward the western window, which looked out on the dead and blasted world of Edom. You've seen what happens to a world without protectors, he gloated. Your world will die. Death on death, and blood in the streets.
Clary thought of Magnus. I saw a city all of blood, with towers made of bone, and blood ran in the streets like water.
You can't imagine, she said in a dead voice, that if you do this, if what you're telling me is going to happen does actually happen, that there is any chance I would sit on a throne beside you. I'd rather be tortured to death.
Oh, I don't think it, he said breezily. That's why I've waited, you see, to give you a choice. All those fair folk who are my allies, all the Undarkened you see there, they wait on my orders. If I give the signal, they will stand down, Your world will be safe. You'll never be able to return there, of course. I'll seal the borders between this world and that, and never again will anyone, demon or human, travel between them. But it will be safe.
A choice, Clary said. You said you were giving me a choice.
Of course, he said. Rule beside me, and I will spare your world.
Refuse,
and I will give the order to annihilate it. Choose me, and you can save millions, billions of lives, my sister. You could save a whole world by damning a single soul, your own. So tell me, what is your decision?
Magnus, Alex said desperately, reaching to feel the Adamus chains, sunk deep into the floor, that connected to the manacles on the warlock's wrists.
Are you all right? Are you hurt?
Isabel and Simon were checking Luke for injuries. Isabel kept glancing back at Alec, her face anxious. Alec deliberately didn't meet her gaze, not wanting her to see the fear in his eyes. He touched the back of his hand to Magnus's face. Magnus looked sunken and sallow, his lips dry, ashy shadows beneath his eyes.
My Alec, Magnus had said. You've been so sad. I didn't know.
And then he had sunk back against the floor, as if the effort of speaking exhausted him.
Hold still,
Alec said now, and drew a seraph blade from his belt. He opened his mouth to name it, and felt a sudden touch at his wrist. Magnus had wrapped his slender fingers around Alec's wrist.
Call it Raphael, Magnus said.
And when Alec looked at him in puzzlement, Magnus glanced toward the blade in Alec's hand. His eyes were half closed, and Alec remembered what Sebastian had said in the entryway to Simon.
I killed the one who made you.
Magnus's mouth quirked at the corner.
It is an angel's name, he said.
Alec nodded.
Raphael, he said softly,
and when the blade blazed up, he brought it down hard on the Adamus chain, which splintered under the touch of the knife. The chains fell away, and Alec, dropping the blade to the floor, reached forward to take Magnus by the shoulders and help him up. Magnus reached for Alec, but instead of rising to his feet, he pulled Alec against him, his hand sliding up Alec's back to knot in his hair. Magnus pulled Alec down and against him, and kissed him, hard and awkward and determined, and Alec froze for a moment, and then abandoned himself to it, to kissing Magnus. Something he thought he'd never get to do again. Alec ran his hands up Magnus's shoulders, to the sides of his neck, and cupped his hands there, holding Magnus in place while he kissed him thoroughly, breathless. Finally, Magnus drew back. His eyes were shining. He let his head fall onto Alec's shoulder, arms encircling him, keeping them tightly together.
Alec, he began softly.
Yes,
Alec said, desperate to know what Magnus wanted to ask him.
Are you being chased?
Some of the Indokind are looking for us,
Alec said carefully.
Pity,
Magnus said, closing his eyes again.
It would be nice if you could just lie down with me here, just for a little while.
Well, you can't, said Isabel, not unkindly. We have to get out of here. The Indokan will be here any second, and we've got what we came for.
Jocelyn. Luke drew away from the wall, straightening up. You're forgetting Jocelyn. Isabel opened her mouth, then closed it again.
You're right, she said.
Her hand went to her weapons belt, and she unfastened a sword. Taking a step across the room, she handed it to Luke, then bent down to pick up Alec's still-burning seraph blade. Luke took the sword and held it with the careless competence of someone who had handled blades all their life. Sometimes it was hard for Alec to remember that Luke had been a shadow hunter once, but he remembered now.
Can you stand?
Alec said to Magnus gently, and Magnus nodded and let Alec lift him to his feet. He lasted almost 10 seconds before his knees buckled and he collapsed forward, coughing.
Magnus!
Alec exclaimed, and threw himself down by the warlock's side. But Magnus waved him away and struggled up to his knees.
You should go without me, he said,
in a voice made gravelly by hoarseness.
I'll slow you down. I don't understand.
Alec felt as if a vice were compressing his heart.
What happened? What did he do to you?
Magnus shook his head. It was Luke who answered.
This dimension is killing Magnus, he said, voice flat. There's something about it, about his father, that's destroying him.
Alec glanced at Magnus, but Magnus only shook his head again. Alec fought down an irrational burst of anger.
Still withholding things, even now,
and took a deep breath.
The rest of you go find Jocelyn, he said. I'll stay with Magnus. We'll head toward the center of the keep. When you find her, come looking for us there.
Isabel looked wretched.
Alec. Please, Izzy, said Alec,
and he saw Simon put his hand on Isabel's back and whisper something into her ear. She nodded, finally, and turned toward the door. Luke and Simon followed her, both pausing to look back at Alec before they went. But it was the image of Izzy that stuck in his mind, carrying her blazing seraph blade in front of her like a star.
Here, he said to Magnus as gently as he could, and reached down to lift him up.
Magnus stumbled to his feet, and Alec managed to get one of the warlock's long arms slung over his shoulder. Magnus was thinner than he had ever been. His shirt clung to his ribs, and the spaces under his cheekbones looked sunken. But there was still a lot of warlock to contend with. A lot of skinny arms and legs and long bony spine.
Hold on to me, Alec said,
and Magnus gave him the sort of smile that made Alec feel like someone had taken an apple corer to his heart and tried to dig out the center.
I always do, Alexander, he said. I always do.
The baby had fallen asleep in Julian's lap. He was holding Tavi tightly, carefully. Great dark hollows under his eyes. Livy and Ty were huddled together on one side of him, Drew curled against him on the other. Emma sat behind him, her back against his, giving him something to lean on to balance the weight of the baby. There were no free pillars to sit against, no bare space of wall. Dozens, hundreds of children were prisoned in the hall. Emma leaned her head back against Jules's. He smelled the way he always did, soap, sweat, and the tang of ocean, as if he carried it in his veins. It was comforting and not comforting in its familiarity. I hear something, she whispered. Do you? Julian's eyes flicked immediately to his brothers and sisters. Livy was half asleep, her chin propped on her hand. Drew was looking all over the room, her big blue-green eyes taking everything in. Ty was tapping his finger against the marble floor, obsessively counting from 1 to 100 and backward again. He had kicked and screamed when Julian had tried to look at a welt on his arm where he had fallen. Jules had let it go and allowed Ty to go back to his counting and rocking. It soothed him to quietness, which was what mattered. What do you hear? Jules asked, and Emma's head fell back then as the sound rose, a sound like a great wind or the crackle of a massive bonfire. People started to move and cry out, looking up at the glass ceiling of the hall. Through it, clouds were visible, moving across the face of the moon. And then from the clouds burst a wild assortment of riders, riders of black horses whose hooves were flame, riders of massive black dogs with orange burning eyes. More modern forms of transport were mixed in as well, black carriages drawn by skeletal steeds and motorcycles gleaming with chrome and bone and onyx. The Wild Hunt, Jules whispered. The wind was a living thing, whipping the clouds into peaks and valleys that the horsemen hurtled up and down, their cries audible even over the gale, their hands bristling with weapons, swords and maces and spears and crossbows. The front doors of the hall began to shake and tremble. The wooden bar that had been placed across them exploded into splinters. The Nephilim stared toward the doors with terrified eyes. Emma heard the voice of one of the guards among the crowd speaking in a harsh whisper. The Wild Hunt are chasing away our warriors outside the hall, she said. The Andarkrund are clearing away the iron and the grave dirt. They'll break down the doors if the guards don't get rid of them. The Raging Host has come, said Ty, breaking off his counting briefly. The Gatherers of the Dead. But the Council protected the city against fairies, Emma protested. Why? They're not ordinary fairies, said Ty. The salt, the grave dirt, the cold iron, it won't work on the Wild Hunt. Drew whipped round and looked up. The Wild Hunt, she said. Does that mean Mark's here? Has he come to save us? Don't be a fool, Ty said witheringly. Mark is with the Huntsmen now, and the Wild Hunt want there to be battles. They come to gather the dead when it's all over, and the dead serve them. Drew screwed up her face in confusion. The doors of the hall were shuddering violently now, the hinges threatening to tear free of the walls. But if Mark isn't coming to save us, then who will? No one, said Ty, and only the nervous tapping of his fingers on marble showed that the idea bothered him at all. No one is coming to save us. We're going to die. Jocelyn flung herself once more against the door. Her shoulder was already bruised and bloody, her nails torn where she'd gouged at the lock. She had been hearing the sounds of fighting for a quarter of an hour now, the unmistakable sounds of running feet, of demons screaming. The knob of the door began to turn. She scrambled back and seized up the brick she'd managed to loosen from the wall. She couldn't kill Sebastian, she knew that much, but if she could hurt him, slow him. The door swung open, and the brick flew from her hand. The figure in the doorway ducked, the brick hit the wall, and Luke straightened up and looked at her in curiosity. I hope when we're married that's not the way you greet me every day when I come home, he said. Jocelyn hurled herself at him. He was filthy and bloody and dusty, his shirt torn, a sword in his right hand, but his left arm came around her and held her close. Luke, she said into his neck, and for a moment she thought she might shake apart from relief and happiness and delirium and fear, the way she'd shaken apart in his arms when she'd found out he'd been bitten. If only she'd known then, had realized then, that the way she loved him was the way you loved someone you wanted to spend your life with. Everything would have been different. But then there would never have been Clary. She pulled back, looking up into his face, his blue eyes steady on hers. A daughter? She asked. She's here, he said, and stepped back so that she could see past him to where Isabel and Simon waited in the corridor, both looking very uncomfortable, as if seeing two adults embrace was about the worst thing you could glimpse, even in the demon realms. Come with us. We're going to find her.
It's not certain, Clary said desperately. The Shadow Hunters might not lose. They could rally. Sebastian smiled. That's a chance you could take, he said. But listen, they have come to Alicante now, those who ride the winds between the worlds. They are drawn to places of slaughter. Can you see? He gestured toward the window that opened out onto Alicante. Through it, Clary could see the Hall of Accords under the moonlight, clouds moving restlessly to and fro in the background. And then the clouds resolved themselves and became something else. Something she had seen once before, with Jace, lying in the bottom of a boat in Venice. The Wild Hunt, racing across the sky, dark clothes and ragged warriors bristling with weapons, howling as their ghostly steeds pounded across the sky. The Wild Hunt, she said, numb, and remembered Mark Blackthorne suddenly, the whip marks on his body, his broken eyes. The Gatherers of the Dead, said Sebastian. The Carrion Crows of Magic. They go where great slaughter is. A slaughter only you can prevent. Clary closed her eyes. She felt as if she were adrift, floating on dark water, seeing the lights of the shore recede and recede in the distance. Soon she would be alone on the ocean, the icy sky above her and 8 miles of empty darkness below. Go and take the throne, he said. If you do it, you can save them all. She looked at him. How do I know you'll keep your word? He shrugged. I'd be a fool not to. You'd know immediately that I'd lied to you, and then you'd fight me, which I don't want. Besides, to fully come into my power here, I must seal the borders between our world and this one. Once the borders are closed, the Undarkened in your world will be weakened, cut off from me, their source. The Nephilim will be able to defeat them. He smiled, ice white and blinding. It will be a miracle performed for them by us, by me. Ironic, don't you think?
that I should be this saving angel.
What about everyone who's here? Jace, my mom, my friends.
They can all live. It makes no difference to me, Sebastian said. They cannot harm me, not now, and doubly not when the borders are sealed.
And all I have to do is ascend that throne, Clary said,
and promise to stay beside me for as long as I live, which, admittedly, will be a long time. When this world is sealed, I will not just be invulnerable. I will live forever. And behold, I am alive forevermore, and have the keys of hell and of death.
You're willing to do this? Give up the whole world of Earth, your dark shadow hunters, your revenge?
It was beginning to bore me, said Sebastian. This is more interesting.
To be honest, you're beginning to bore me a bit too. Do decide whether you're going to get up on the throne or not, will you? Or do you need persuasion?
Clary knew Sebastian's methods of persuasion. Knives under the fingernails, a hand to the throat. Part of her wished he would kill her, take this decision away from her. No one could help her. In this, she was utterly alone.
I will not be the only one who lives forever, Sebastian said, and to her surprise, his voice was almost gentle. Ever since you discovered the Shadow World, haven't you secretly wanted to be a hero? To be the most special of a special people? In our own way, we each wish to be the hero of our kind.
Heroes save worlds, Clary said. They don't destroy them.
And I am offering you that chance, said Sebastian. When you ascend that throne, you save the world. You save your friends. You have power unlimited. I am giving you a great gift, because I love you. You can't embrace your own darkness, and yet always tell yourself that you did the right thing. How is that for getting everything you want?
Clary closed her eyes for one heartbeat, and then another. Only enough time to see faces flash behind her eyelids. Jace, her mother, Luke, Simon, Isabel, Alec, and so many more. Maya and Raphael, and the Blackthorns, little Emma Carstairs, the fairies of the Seely Court, the faces of the Clave, even the ghostly memory of her father. She opened her eyes and walked toward the throne. She heard Sebastian behind her draw a sharp breath. So, for all the surety in his voice, he had doubted, hadn't he? He had not been sure of her. Behind the thrones, the two windows flickered like video screens, one showing desolation, the other Alicante under attack. She caught glimpses of the inside of the Accords Hall as she reached the steps and walked up them. She moved steadily. She had made her decision. There was no faltering now. The throne was huge. It was like climbing up onto a platform. The gold of it was icy cold to her touch. She reached the last step, turned, and took her seat. She seemed to be looking down for miles from the top of a mountain peak. She saw the council hall spread out before her, Jace lying motionless by the wall, Sebastian looking up at her with a smile spreading over his face.
Well done, he said. My sister. My queen.
23. Judas Kiss. The doors of the hall exploded inward with a blast of splinters. Shards of marble and wood flew like shattered bone. Emma stared numbly as red-clad warriors began to spill into the hall, followed by fairies in green and white and silver. And after them came the Nephilim, shadow hunters in black gear, desperate to protect their children. A wave of guards raced to meet the Undarkened at the door and were cut down. Emma watched them fall in what felt like slow motion. She knew she had risen to her feet, and so had Julian, thrusting Tavi into Livia's arms. They both moved to block the younger Blackthorns, as hopeless as Emma knew the gesture was. This is how it ends, she thought. They had run from Sebastian's warriors in Los Angeles, had fled to the Penhallows, and from the Penhallows to the hall, and now they were trapped like rats and they would die here, and they might as well never have run at all. She reached for Cortana, thinking of her father, of what he would have said if she gave up. Carstairs didn't give up. They suffered and survived, or they died on their feet. At least if she died, she thought, she'd see her parents again. At least she'd have that. The Andarkans surged into the room, parting the desperately fighting Shadowhunters like blades parting a field of wheat, driving toward the center of the hall. They seemed a murderous blur, but Emma's vision sharpened suddenly as one of them moved out of the crowd, directly towards the Blackthorns. It was Julian's father. His time as a servant of Sebastian had not been good to him. His skin looked dull and grey, his face welted with bloody cuts, but he was striding forward purposefully, his eyes on his children. Emma froze. Julian beside her had caught sight of his father. He seemed mesmerized as if by a snake. He had seen his father forced to drink from the infernal cup, Emma realized, but he hadn't seen him after, hadn't seen him raise a blade to his own son or laugh about the idea of his son's death or force Katerina to her knees to be tortured and turned. "Jules," she said. "Jules, that isn't your father." His eyes widened. "Emma, look out!" She whirled and screamed. A fairy warrior was looming above her, decked in silver armor. His hair was not hair at all, but a ropey tangle of thorned branches. Half his face was burned and bubbling where he must have been sprayed with iron powder or rock salt. One of his eyes was rolling, white and blinded, but the other fixed on Emma with murderous intent. Emma saw Diana Rayburn, her dark hair whirling as she spun toward them, her mouth open to cry a warning. Diana moved toward Emma and the fairy, but there was no way she was going to make it in time. The fairy raised its bronze sword with a savage snarl. Emma lunged forward, sinking Cortana into his chest. His blood was green like water. It sprayed out over her hand as she let go of her sword in shock. He fell like a tree, striking the marble floor of the hall with a heavy clang. She sprang forward, reaching for the hilt of Cortana, and heard Julian cry out, "Ty!" She whipped around. Amid the chaos of the hall, she could see the small space in which the Blackthorn stood. Andrew Blackthorn stopped in front of his children, an odd little smile on his face, and reached out a hand. And Ty of all of them, the least trusting, the least sentimental, was moving forward, his eyes fixed on his father, his own hand outstretched. "Dad?" he said. "Ty?" Livia reached for her twin, but her hand closed on air. "Ty, don't..." "Don't listen to her," said Andrew Blackthorn, and if there had been any doubt that he was no longer the man who had been Julian's father, it was gone when Emma heard his voice. There was no kindness in it, only ice and the savage edge of a cruel glee. "Come here, my boy, my Tiberius." Ty took another step forward, and Julian pulled the short sword from his belt and threw it. It sang through the air, straight and true, and Emma remembered, with a bizarre clarity, that last day in the Institute, and Katerina showing them how to throw a blade as direct and graceful as a line of poetry. How to throw a blade so that it never missed its mark. The blade whipped past Tiberius and sank into Andrew Blackthorn's chest. The man's eyes flew open in shock, his grey hand fumbling for the hilt protruding from his ribcage, and then he fell, crumpling to the ground. His blood smeared across the marble floor as Tiberius gave a cry, whirling to lash out at his brother, pounding his fists against Julian's chest. "No," Ty panted. "Why did you do that, Jules? I hate you. I hate you." Julian hardly seemed to feel it. He was staring at the place where his father had fallen. The other Endarkand were already moving forward, trampling the body of their fallen comrade. Diana Rayburn stood a distance away. She had begun to move toward the children and then stopped, her eyes full of sorrow. Hands came up and caught at the back of Tiberius's shirt, pulling him away from Julian. It was Livy, her face set. "Ty!" Her arms went around her twin, pinning his fist to his sides. "Tiberius, stop it right now!" Ty stopped and sagged against his sister. Slight as she was, she supported his weight. "Ty," she said again softly. "He had to, don't you understand? He had to." Julian stepped back. His face was white as paper. Stepped back and back until he hit one of the stone pillars and slid down it, crumpling, his shoulders shaking with silent gasps.
"My sister," my queen. Clary sat rigid on the ivory and gold throne. She felt like a child in an adult's chair. The thing had been built for someone massive, and her feet dangled above the top step. Her hands gripped the arms of the throne, but her fingers didn't come close to reaching the carved handrests. Though, since each was shaped like a skull, she had no desire to touch them anyway. Sebastian was pacing inside his protective circle of runes. Every once in a while, he would pause to look up at her and smile the sort of uninhibited, gleeful smile she associated with the Sebastian from her vision, the boy with guiltless green eyes. He drew a long, sharp dagger from his belt as she watched and ran the blade along the inside of his palm. His head fell back, his eyes half closing, as he stretched his hand out. Blood ran down his fingers and splattered onto the runes. Each began to glow with a dawning spark as the blood struck it. Clary pressed herself against the solid back of the throne. The runes were not Greybook runes. They were alien and strange. The door to the room opened, and Amatis strode in, followed by two moving lines of endarkened warriors. Their faces were blank as they silently ranged themselves along the walls of the room, but Amatis looked worried. Her gaze skipped past Jace, motionless on the floor beside the body of the dead demon, to focus on her master.
"Lord Sebastian," she said, "your mother is not in her cell."
Sebastian frowned and tightened his bleeding hand into a fist. All around him the runes were burning fiercely now, with a cold ice-blue flame.
"Vexing," he said. "The others must have let her out."
Clary felt a surge of hope mixed with terror. She forced herself to remain silent, but saw Amatis's eyes flick toward her. She didn't seem surprised to see Clary on the throne. On the contrary, her lips curved into a smirk.
"Would you like me to set the rest of the army to searching for them?" she said to Sebastian. "There's no need."
He glanced up toward Clary and smiled. There was a sudden explosive shattering sound, and the window behind her, the one that had looked out on Alicante, splintered into a spiderweb of mazed lines.
"The borders are closing," Sebastian said. "I will bring them to me."
"The walls are closing in," Magnus said.
Alec tried to pull Magnus farther upright. The warlock slumped heavily against him, his head almost on Alec's shoulder. Alec had absolutely no idea where they were going. He had lost track of the twisting corridors what felt like ages ago, but he had no desire to communicate that to Magnus. Magnus seemed to be doing badly enough as it was, his breathing ragged and shallow, his heartbeat rapid. And now this.
"Everything's fine," Alec soothed, his arm sliding around Magnus's waist. "We just have to make it to—"
"Alec," Magnus said again, his voice surprisingly firm. "I am not hallucinating. The walls are moving."
Alec stared and felt a flutter of panic. The corridor was heavy with dusty air. The walls seemed to shimmer and tremble. The floor warped as the walls began to slide toward each other, the corridor narrowing from one end like a trash compactor slamming closed. Magnus slipped and hit one of the buckling walls with a hiss of pain. Panicked, Alec seized his arm and pulled Magnus toward him.
"Sebastian," Magnus gasped, as Alec began to drag him down the hall, away from the collapsing stone. "He's doing this."
Alec managed an incredulous look.
"How would that even be possible? He doesn't control everything." "He could, if he sealed the borders between the dimensions."
Magnus took a rattling breath as he pushed himself into a run.
"He could control this whole world."
Isabel shrieked as the ground opened up behind her. She threw herself forward just in time to avoid toppling into the chasm that was splitting the corridor apart.
"Isabel!"
Simon shouted, and reached to catch her by the shoulders. He forgot sometimes the strength that his vampire blood flooded through his body. He wrenched Isabel up with such force that they both toppled backward and Izzy landed on top of him. Under other circumstances he might have enjoyed it, but not with the stone keep shuddering itself apart around them. Isabel sprang to her feet, pulling him up after.
They had lost Luke and Jocelyn back in one of the other corridors, as a wall had split apart, shedding mortarless rocks like scales. Everything since then had been a mad dash, dodging splintering wood and falling stones, and now chasms opening up in the ground. Simon was fighting despair. He couldn't help but feel that this was the end. The fortress would fall apart around them, and they would die and be buried here. "Don't," Isabel said, breathless. Her dark hair was full of dust, her face bloody where a flying rock had cut her skin. "Don't what?" The ground heaved, and Simon half ducked, half fell forward into another corridor. He couldn't rid himself of the thought that somehow the fortress was hurting them. There seemed a purpose to its dissolution, as if it were directing them somehow. "Don't give up," she gasped, flinging herself against a set of doors as the corridor behind them began to crumble. The doors swung open and she and Simon tumbled into the next room. Isabel sucked in a gasp, quickly cut off as the doors slammed behind them, shutting away the explosive noise of the keep. For a moment, Simon simply thanked God that the ground under his feet was steady and the walls weren't moving. Then he registered where he was, and his relief vanished. They were in an enormous room, semicircular in shape, with a raised platform at the curved end, half cast in shadow. The walls were lined with endarkened warriors in red gear, like a row of scarlet teeth. The room stank like pitch and fire, sulfur and the unmistakable taint of demon blood. The body of a bloated demon lay sprawled against one wall, and near it was another body. Simon felt his mouth go dry. Jace. Within a circle of glowing runes etched on the floor stood Sebastian. He grinned as Isabel gave a cry, ran to Jace, and dropped down by his side. She put her fingers to his throat. Simon saw her shoulders relax. "He's alive," Sebastian said, sounding bored. "Queen's orders." Isabel looked up. Some of the strands of her dark hair were stuck to her face with blood. She looked fierce and beautiful.
"The Sealy Queen?
When has she ever cared about Jace?"
Sebastian laughed. He seemed to be in an enormously good mood. "Not the Sealy Queen," he said. "The Queen of this realm. You may know her."
With a flourish, he gestured toward the platform at the far end of the room, and Simon felt his unbeating heart contract. He had barely glanced at the dais when he had come into the room. He saw now that on it were two thrones, of ivory bone and melted gold, and on the right-hand throne sat Clary. Her red hair was incredibly vivid against the white and gold, like a banner of fire. Her face was pale and still, expressionless. Simon took an involuntary step forward, and was immediately blocked by a dozen endarkened warriors, Amatis at their center. She carried a massive spear and wore an expression of frightening venom.
"Stop where you are, vampire," she said. "You will not approach the lady of this realm."
Simon staggered back. He could see Isabel staring incredulously from Clary to Sebastian to him. "Clary!" he called. She didn't flinch or move, but Sebastian's face darkened like a thunderstorm.
"You will not say my sister's name," he hissed. "You thought she belonged to you. She belongs to me now, and I will not share."
"You're insane," Simon said.
"And you're dead," Sebastian said. "Does any of it matter now?"
His eyes raked up and down Simon. "Dear sister," he said, pitching his voice loudly enough for the whole room to hear it,
"are you absolutely sure you want to keep this one intact?"
Before she could answer, the entryway to the room burst open and Magnus and Alex spilled in, followed by Luke and Jocelyn. The door slammed behind them, and Sebastian clapped his hands together. One hand was bloody, and a drop of blood fell at his feet and sizzled where it hit the glowing runes, like water sizzling on a hot skillet.
"Now everyone's here," he declared, his voice delighted. "It's a party."
In Clary's life she had seen many things that were wonderful and beautiful, and many things that were terrible.
but none were as terrible as the look on her mother's face as Jocelyn stared at her daughter, seated on the throne beside Sebastian's.
"Mom," Clary breathed, so softly that no one could hear her. They were all staring at her. Magnus and Alec, Luke and her mother, Simon and Isabel, who had moved to hold Jace in her lap, her dark hair falling down over him like the fringe of a shawl. It was every bit as bad as Clary had imagined it would be. Worse. She'd expected shock and horror. She hadn't thought of hurt and betrayal. Her mother staggered back. Luke's arms went around her to hold her up, but his gaze was on Clary, and he looked as if he were staring at a stranger.
"Welcome, citizens of Edom," said Sebastian, his lips curling up like a bow being drawn. "Welcome to your new world."
And he stepped free of the burning circle that held him. Luke's hand went to his belt. Isabel began to rise, but it was Alec who moved fastest, one hand to his bow and the other to the quiver at his back. The arrow knocked and flying before Clary could shape the cry for him to stop. The arrow flew straight toward Sebastian and buried itself in his chest. He staggered back from the force of it, and Clary heard a gasp ripple down the line of dark shadow hunters. A moment later, Sebastian regained his balance and, with a look of annoyance, pulled the arrow from his chest. It was stained with blood.
"Fool," he said. "You can't hurt me. Nothing under heaven can."
He flung the arrow at Alec's feet.
"Did you think you were an exception?"
Alec's eyes flicked toward Jace. It was minute, but Sebastian caught the glance and grinned.
"Ah, yes," he said. "Your hero with the heavenly fire. But it's gone, isn't it? Spent on rage in the desert at a demon of my sending."
He snapped his fingers, and a spark of blue ice shot from them, rising like a mist. For a moment, Clary's view of Jace and Isabel was obscured. A moment later, she heard a cough and a gasp, and Isabel's arms were sliding away from Jace as he sat up, then rose to his feet. Behind Clary, the window was still splintering, slowly. She could hear the grind of the glass. Through the now crazed glass spilled a lace-like quilting of light and shadow.
"Welcome back, brother," said Sebastian, equably,
as Jace stared around him with a face that was rapidly draining of color as he took in the room full of warriors. His friends, standing horrified around him, and lastly, Clary, on her throne.
"Would you like to try to kill me? You have plenty of weapons there. If you feel like you'd like to try slaying me with the heavenly fire, now is your chance."
He opened his arms wide.
"I won't fight back."
Jace stood facing Sebastian. They were the same height, almost the same build, though Sebastian was thinner, more wiry. Jace was filthy and blood-stained, his gear torn, his hair tangled. Sebastian was elegant in red. Even his bloody hand seemed intentional. Sebastian's wrists were bare. Around Jace's left wrist, a silver circlet gleamed.
"You're wearing my bracelet," Sebastian observed. "If I cannot reach heaven, I will raise hell."
"Apt, don't you think?"
"Jace!" Isabel hissed. "Jace, do it! Stab him, go on!"
But Jace was shaking his head. His hand had been at his weapons belt. Slowly, he lowered it to his side. Isabel gave a cry of despair. The look on Alec's face was just as bleak, though he stayed silent. Sebastian lowered his arms to his sides and held out his hand.
"I believe that it's time you returned my bracelet, brother. Time you rendered unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Give me back my possessions, including my sister. Do you renounce her to my keeping?"
"No!"
It wasn't Jace, it was Jocelyn. She pulled away from Luke and launched herself forward, hands reaching out for Sebastian.
"You hate me, so kill me! Torture me, do what you want to me, but leave Clary alone!"
Sebastian rolled his eyes.
"I am torturing you."
"She's just a girl," Jocelyn panted. "My child, my daughter."
Sebastian's hand shot out and gripped Jocelyn's jaw, half lifting her off the floor.
"I was your child," he said.